Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
It's Tuesday and coming to you live from DW Studios in Bonn, Germany, this is Africa Link with me, Abubakar Jallo. Coming up, President Paul Kagame commends Rwandans for saying yes to a constitutional amendment that allows him to run the country until 2034.
No individual is there forever, but there is no term limit on values, institutions, or progress.
Burundi's parliament rejects a proposed African Union peacekeeping mission, which the government has already described as an invasion force.
We will visit countries that will accept to send troops to Burundi, as we represent citizens. We will ask their parliaments if they want to attack Burundi.
And also on the program, we will be hearing how a businessman in Sierra Leone is helping children with heart problems seek medical treatment abroad. Stay tuned.
Top story.
Rwanda's President Paul Kagame has held a constitutional referendum that allows him to stay in power until 2034. He, however, did not mention whether he intends to run again for a third term in the next election. Kagame had previously said he would make a decision whether he would stand in the 2017 polls after results were in from Friday's referendum. From Kigali, Nazra Bishumba sent this report.
In his annual State of the Nation address, President Kagame reiterated his government's commitment to improve the lives of ordinary Rwandans rather than paying attention to his critics. In recent days, the international community has urged President Kagame to avoid constitutional amendments and respect term limits. But in a message that was indirectly meant to answer back to the international community, Kagame said that Rwandans have decided to establish a specific interval in which to fortify their gains and were fully focused on what he called the politics of prosperity.
No individual is there forever, but there is no term limit on values, institutions, or progress. When the time comes to transfer responsibility from one public servant to another, Rwandans already have confidence that it will be done in an orderly and harmonious manner.
Kagame has in the past said it would be a failure if he did not find a suitable replacement before the end of his current mandate. However, during his address that was attended by government officials and foreign dignitaries, he did not hint whether he will run for office or not. He nevertheless described the kind of democracy Rwandans would prefer over the third term debate that has caused a storm on the international scene.
Our democracy is stronger because we have continued to define ourselves and refuse to be distracted. What was at issue has been pretty much resolved. The Rwanda we have today is already more than we dared expect 21 short years ago. We stand up for these propositions without hesitation and undaunted by reproach. The results are undeniable, and the historical context is unforgettable, at least to us Rwandans.
But the president of Rwanda's opposition party, the Democratic Green Party, Frank Habineza, says his party was denied a chance to campaign for a no vote by the Electoral Commission and that he will not give up the fight to see that there is smooth transition of power.
For us, what we feel is that the president has said several times that, first of all, he's not interested in a third term. Then he said that if the time comes for him to go, he has no one to take over. We also call upon the international community to talk to him and convince him that it is very important for him to keep his promises.
However, ordinary Rwandans feel that the country under President Paul Kagame is on the right track. I spoke to some who followed the president's speech.
He didn't really come out to say if he's going to stand again or not. However, let's just keep in mind that there's still time. He still has enough time to make that decision. So I think that is only thing that Rwandans are actually looking forward to. But overall, I think it was a good speech, and I'm hoping to look forward to see how the national dialogue goes on and what decisions probably that he might put in place and the big announcement as we all expect.
When the speech was beginning, I anticipated that Well, hopefully there would be an announcement from His Excellency saying he would run again 2017. But by the end of the speech, it was sad to note that he did not comment if he was coming back or not. So we're still waiting. Hopefully he will announce before the year ends and we'll have either celebration or a day of sadness.
For now, it remains upon President Kagame to decide whether or not to run for another term.
Nazra Bishumba in Kigali. Rwanda's Electoral Commission has released the final result of the referendum on a constitutional amendment. About 98% of Rwandans voted yes to change the constitution that limited presidents to only 2 terms. As you heard in that report, the main opposition, the Democratic Green Party, said they were not treated fairly in the run-up to the referendum. My colleague Isaac Mugabe has been speaking to the Executive Secretary of the Rwanda National Electoral Commission, Charles Munyaneza, about the result and the complaints raised by the opposition.
And as it stands now, 98.3% of Rwandans voted yes, and close to 1.7 said no. So that's what is at stake, and it's clear that the people of Rwanda decided or agreed with the amendment process of the constitution.
The leader of the Green Party, actually, which is said to be Rwanda's real main opposition party, Frank Habineza, who said that you denied them the chance, you, the Electoral Commission, to carry out campaigns about the referendum. What have you got to say about that?
That's not correct. In the first place, I came even to know that by the time we were running to election, that gentleman in place was not in Rwanda. I also know that he voted in the diaspora. It might be that he was not in Rwanda and therefore did not know exactly what was happening. But in any case, the Electoral Commission did not stop anybody from campaigning. What the Electoral Commission does is to receive information that somebody wants to campaign. We didn't get any request. We were not informed of any request. And nobody went to campaign and he was or she was stopped by anybody. There's nothing on record. And once we read our regulation, this referendum, you will not read anywhere that is stated that nobody not allowed to campaign. And personally, I start with the Secretary General of the Green Party on one of the radio talk shows. He spent 2 hours campaigning for a no. I was with him on the panel. For me, I was just explaining how elections were going to be conducted, and I was educating the people how they are going to manage the process. And he was there campaigning for a no. Nobody stopped him.
Some observers or analysts say that the Electoral Commission is biased towards the government because the officials are nominated by the government itself or the cabinet. Any comment on that?
We cannot be biased. We are professional people. We are professionals. And as professionals, we cannot be biased. And this is on record. Whether we are nominated by government or not, what's important is how we operate, how we execute our duties, and one of them know this. So we are very professional, and we have never seen or had any complaint against us. This is not the first time we have managed elections. We have been in elections since 2001. So the Electoral Commission will continue executing its duties. We are Rwandans in the first place. We don't know who will come and say, no, your Electoral Commission is bad. No, what we are doing is in the government, in the people's interest, and therefore cannot be deterred to deliver elections the way we think it should be delivered. We are happy that the people of Rwanda are happy also with what we are doing as the Electoral Commission.
Charles Munyaneza, Executive Secretary of Rwanda's National Electoral Commission.
Get the stories that are shaping the continent here on Africa Link.
Burundi's parliament has criticized a proposed African Union peacekeeping mission. This follows a day after a government spokesman called the AU proposal an invasion force. Last Friday, the AU said it will send a 5,000-strong force to halt violence that has sparked fears that Burundi is sliding back towards civil war. Lawmakers rejected the planned force amid growing international alarm over violence in the Central African nation. From Bujumbura, Apollinaire Niyorora sent this report.
Burundian MPs held a 3-hour debate on Monday that was meant to discuss sending troops into the country to help stop the spreading violence. Most MPs, though, felt that UN troops are not necessary as there is no genocide looming in the East African country. According to Burundian Senate President Reverien Ndikuriyo, there is a difference between killings and a genocide, arguing that no genocide is taking place in Burundi to necessitate foreign intervention.
We will visit countries that will accept to send troops to Burundi, as we represent citizens. We will ask their parliaments if they want to attack Burundi. We will also check whether people don't die there, because dying and genocide are different. If four people die, it's not a genocide.
While most MPs from the ruling party were opposed to the deployment of troops, other MPs, including Second Vice Speaker of the National Assembly, Agathon Rwasa, said the Burundian government should consider insecurity as a serious problem.
Today, it's regrettable that Burundians have been killed in mysterious circumstances. Maybe you can find neighborhoods where there is serious insecurity. Even if it's one village, it's a problem. We have to understand that it's a national problem.
Some MPs also urged the government to do its best to stop criminality to avoid all pretexts for foreign intervention. However, Tassien Sibomana, MP from the Union for National Progress, UPRONA, who refused to take his seat, arguing that the 2015 elections were unfair, stressed that serious organizations, including the UN and the AU, cannot simplify crimes like genocide. According to Sibomana, the ruling party is committed to combating foreign intervention that would come to protect the population.
Serious organizations like the UN and the AU cannot trivialize crimes like genocide. For a parliament made up by 90% of MPs from the ruling party, it is very normal to trivialize the crime that was committed.
L'intervention étrangère qui viendra protéger les populations.
Last week, the African Union Peace and Security Council issued a resolution on the deployment of 5,000 troops to prevent what they consider a potential genocide in Burundi.
Apollinaire Nyirora reporting from Bujumbura.
Africa on the move.
Universities in Tanzania have taken the fight against female genital mutilation to another level. They have introduced a course that will equip doctors and social psychologists with the skills and knowledge to fight the harmful practice. This makes Tanzania the second country in Africa to offer such lessons after Ghana. From Arusha, Charles Ingereza sent this report.
The battle against FGM in Tanzania has often been verbal, with very little done to help the victims. This was due to lack of qualified medical personnel to handle the issue. This initiative is therefore ultimately expected to lead to a great success in modern times. The Dean of the Nursing School Faculty in Kilimanjaro Medical University, Marceline Suya, told Deutsche Welle that the introduction of the curriculum would give health practitioners the best knowledge in attending to the physical and psychological problems most FGM victims face.
This is a very great value to all health professionals, narrowed down mainly to nurses and medical doctors. Because these FGM clients, when they come, the first people to meet are nurses. And in the curriculum, in the health professional, special doctors and nurses in this college, is a community-oriented curriculum, whereby if they are taught this, both the community will also benefit from the knowledge which they have gained on FGM.
According to Msuya, the courses entail topics such as the origin of FGM and health complications that come with it and how to counsel girls and women affected. Juliet Chugulu is a senior lecturer and an activist at Kilimanjaro Medical University.
So the moment the students gain, when they go to community field work, they will also, I think, give health education to the community and join hands with other stakeholders to fight against this harmful practice that is actually a violation. We are talking of violence, and FGM is one of the violence affecting women in the community. Now, in the community, we have had some experience of working with community members in some areas in Kilimanjaro. and we have seen the advantages of involving the communities in such a practice.
Kilimanjaro Medical University is not alone on this cause. Muhimbili University of Health and Applied Sciences and the University of Dodoma are also offering a new course to train healthcare professionals on how to deal with FGM, which is still widely practiced, although illegal. I traveled to the remote village of Ngorongoro in northern Tanzania to find out more on whether this battle can be easily won. I met with some of the Maasai community elders who vowed that they will never end the practice. Sindio Murero was one of them.
We will continue to circumcise our girls. We are Maasai, it is our tradition, and the government cannot stop us. Our girls must go through this because it is a sacred ritual in our community. These lies from white men are baseless. We have done this for years, and our girls are healthier.
More than 7.9 million girls and women in Tanzania are believed to have undergone FGM, which causes numerous health problems. Some girls bleed to death or die from infections, while others die later in life from childbirth complications.
Charles Ngereza reporting from Arusha. Now, as the year comes to an end, we look at how Africans rose to become investors in the continent. Nigeria and Kenya tops the list of individual investors who have gone to invest outside their own countries. On the political front, democratic power transfers were also witnessed in some countries like Nigeria that saw incumbent President Goodluck Jonathan concede their defeat to now President Muhammadu Buhari. For a closer analysis on what the future holds for Africa, head of DW's Hausa Service, Thomas Mosh, spoke to Kenyan economist James Shikwati.
Africa 2015 has some very positive news, especially when we see a growing number of African business people that invest outside their own countries into other African countries. And for me, that's a very, very positive element, that the language of investor at least now captures African participants, unlike older days where it will be only non-Africans who will be earning that title of an investor.
Economically, do you see more a dull or more bright picture at the end of this year?
I would take it positively, especially when we look at the issue of the oil prices and how they have impacted on especially oil exporting countries such as Angola, Nigeria. And then for the non-oil exporting countries, we've seen a big momentum in Kenya, for example, where there's always this point of intra-Africa trade, trying to grow regional economic blocks. So for me, they are positive momentums. You know, when we see the countries realizing in Africa that they need each other.
On the other hand, it's very often said that sustainable economic development needs stability in the political environment, in security-wise, and also if you talk about the rule of law. On which path do you see Africa democratically and stability-wise?
I would treat the upheavals, the disagreements like what we see in Burundi and what we saw also in Burkina Faso. But one has to appreciate the point that we're dealing with transplanted systems into Africa. And whatever we might refer to as the tough upheavals could be a signal of how Africans are trying to react to a transplanted system. And that reaction, if we manage it positively, can lead to an outcome of a better way of running our democratic processes.
We just saw another Euro-African summit, which was mainly looking at the issue of migration. If you look ahead at next year, what would be your wish? What should Europe and Africa put on the agenda next?
I think Europe has a muscle globally that can lead to reformation of international systems. Here I'm talking about finance, I'm talking about the economic systems, you know, the trade systems that prohibit Africans from, you know, developing and exporting value-added products. I know it's been a debate for a long time, but it will be good if we can see Europe take courage to move in that direction.
Kenyan economist James Shikwati.
Making a difference.
In Making a Difference this week, we bring you the story of one man who is determined to save children with heart problems in Sierra Leone. Many children diagnosed with heart diseases often die because they cannot get the treatment they need due to lack of necessary equipment in Sierra Leone's hospitals. This is where Adonis Abode, a businessman and philanthropist, steps in. Mutala Kamara in Freetown has more.
Dr. Adonis Abode, a well-known Sierra Leonean businessman, co-founded Pikin Business, a non-governmental organization with the purpose of saving vulnerable children with health problems, education, among others. Since 2005, the charity has been able to fly 7 young patients abroad for surgery, and all 7 cases have been successful. The latest patient is a 2-year-old boy, Joshua Campbell, who went through a successful surgery in Paris. His mother, Fatmata Campbell, a petit trader in Freetown, could not afford to raise money for the surgery, so she turned to Pikin Business, which flew Joshua to Paris. Fatmata says she was ecstatic on receiving the news that the operation on her son had been successful.
Well, that day when I get a call for say,
I was so happy when I received the news that the operation was carried out successfully on my son. I thank God for what he has done for me, because operation is a matter of life or death. I'm happy my son went through the operation successfully. I thank God because my son can now play, and I want to say special thanks to Dr. Abu for what he's been doing for people, not just me.
For do this kind of operation, yeah.
Dr. Olu Black is one of 2 specialized cardiologist consultants in Sierra Leone. He works with Adonis Abud and talks about the challenges of treating heart problems in Sierra Leone.
It must be said that we could do more, because the prevalence of congenital heart disease in this country is very, very high. And at this point in time, we will only be in a position to help about 7 with surgery in Paris, France. The list is exceedingly high. We have about close to 200 cases at the least, and they keep on coming.
On his part, Dr. Adonis Abu talks about the motivation to do charity work for vulnerable children.
The whole Pikin Business story started immediately after we returned from the exile in Conakry after the interregnum. And this was really a motivator, not only for me, but for other people as well, who came back to a country devastated with too many social problems, mainly healthcare. And the most vulnerable were the women and children.
That report was compiled by Mutala Kamara in Freetown. And before we leave you, a quick recap of the main stories. President Paul Kagame has commended Rwandans for voting yes to a constitutional amendment that allows him to rule the country until 2034. Kagame has, however, not mentioned whether he intends to run again for a third term. Burundi's parliament has rejected a proposed African Union peacekeeping mission, which the government has already labelled as an invasion force. We've also been hearing how a businessman in Sierra Leone is helping children with heart problems get medical treatment abroad. And there we come to the end of this broadcast. For comments and questions, send us a text message to +491 60 957 59510. That's 491 60 957 59510. An email to feedback.africa@dw.com or a letter to Africa Link, DW 53110, Bonn, Germany. You can also visit our webpage, dw.com/Africa. Until tomorrow, my name is Abubakar Jallo in Bonn, Germany. Bye for now.